Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. Before we begin today's show, I'd like to take a moment to invite you to join me at Accelerate Finance 2025. This year's event takes place in Las Vegas from May 12th to 15th and features a dedicated track for CFOs and aspiring executives, plus keynotes and panels with finance leaders who are redefining what's possible in FP&A. Visit acceleratesummit.com to get your ticket and learn more. The recent Federal Reserve rate cut has sparked a new era of opportunities and challenges for finance leaders. From adjusting cash flow projections to contemplating refinancing options and M&A strategies, CFOs are navigating a complex environment where lower interest rates could significantly impact their company's financial health. This episode of the CFO Show delves into the nuanced world of debt management in the wake of shifting monetary policy, exploring how finance chiefs are leveraging these changes to optimize their debt stacks, hedge against volatility, and position their organizations for future growth in an evolving economic climate. Joining me is Tom Panther, the Chief Financial Officer of Corpay, an S&P 500 corporate payments company. With 30 years of experience in finance, Tom oversees all aspects of Corpay's financial operations, including corporate finance, investor relations, and strategic planning. Tom held leadership positions at EVO Payments and SunTrust Banks. Since taking the helm, Tom has made a significant impact, contributing to Corpay's record-setting year for revenue and stock value. Tom, welcome to the CFO Show.
It's great to join you, Melissa, as well. Great to be here.
You've had a really impressive career, lots of great experience. Can you give us a little brief background on your journey and how you ended up arriving at Corpay and a little bit about what Corpay does?
My journey's been almost 35 years, and it's been in the finance and accounting vertical that entire time, and somewhat uniquely in Atlanta that entire time. I graduated from the University of Richmond and moved to Atlanta, and my wife and I never moved away. And I started at Arthur Andersen, kind of planted the seeds at Arthur Andersen in their financial services practice and spent almost 10 years there. Moved on to a client of mine called SunTrust Banks, where I spent 20 years there working across all sorts of finance domains. And at the time of the SunTrust and BB&T merger, had the opportunity to move to the C-suite of a company called EVO Payments to be their CFO. EVO is, as you note from the name, also in the payments business, but more on the merchant acquiring side. And then in connection with EVO's merger with Global Payments, I had the opportunity to move over to Corpay. And Corpay within the payments ecosystem is more on the issuing side, but it was still part of the payments industry, which I was excited to remain in. It's a vibrant industry. It's got lots of growth, complexity, and it's something that I was excited to be able to have the opportunity to move from one CFO chair to another, both in Atlanta, but also in the payments space. Now, you asked about Corpay. What do they do? I mentioned they're on the issuing side. Really, at a high level, we help businesses pay their expenses. All companies have expenses, both payroll and non-payroll. We focus on the non-payroll expenses. And so we enable businesses all over the globe to be able to pay expenses in an efficient, secure, and timely manner. And we also help them with their back offices to be able to reconcile and maintain their overall books and records in an efficient and kind of streamlined fashion using our technology.
You've got a lot of great experience both on the banking side, the other financial services, and you see what's happening with many, many different customers of yours that you serve now in terms of how they're looking at some of the working capital management and some of the decisions that end up being made as a result of what's happening in the broader macroeconomic environment. You know, that is, I'd say, the only thing that's certain is uncertainty for CFOs over the last several years. There's always these changing dynamics, things we're tracking, interest rates, what's happened with those, even some of the current macro changes that are happening with the governments and different policies, et cetera. What are you seeing in terms of how CFOs are adjusting some of their financial strategies relating to this?
Yeah, well, you're right. It is an active environment out there. There is a lot of change. As you said, there's been new administrations, not just in the U.S., but globally. And about half of our business is international. So we are exposed to that. What I would say, as I look at how we think about it here at Corpay, is being agile, making sure that we remain agile and can be flexible, kind of regardless of that environment. And so we try to position ourselves with flexibility. Being in the payments industry, we do see a lot in terms of spending patterns, particularly obviously at the B2B side, less so on the consumer side. But nonetheless, we see a lot around spending patterns and monitor those in order to understand what's the health of the economies that we're operating in and ultimately what are the spending patterns of our businesses. But I'd say overall, we just want to make sure we remain in a flexible, agile position as we think about the various elements of our business, whether that's pricing or whether that's cost or whether that's balance sheets, you know, specifically kind of liquidity and capital management.
How do you think that current landscape is influencing the way companies are thinking about M&A during this time?
I think it's a significant influence because obviously when it comes to M&A, rarely can you self-fund it. Obviously, it depends on the size of the transaction, but many times, if nothing else, in order to try to gain more growth out of the transaction, they'll want to leverage it up a little bit. And so I think a strong demand for capital markets and debt financing in particular, I think provides a good environment for M&A because companies that are looking to acquire another company should have access to capital to be able to, you know, complete that transaction.
And when you think about this current environment, what are you seeing, whether it's in other companies or as you think about it yourself, ways that CFOs should be maximizing their debt structures? Any advice there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first, what I would say is it's really important to do, in my view, a lot of cash flow forecasting. All companies come at this a little bit differently in terms of their business models, their industries. We're fortunate to have an organization that throws off a lot of free cash flow. We wake up every January 1st with the benefit of being able to generate well over $1 billion of free cash flow every year. So that's something that we automatically, you know, have available to us. But you also want to be able to have the ability to project your cash flows from the standpoint of what incremental financing do you think you would maybe need in order to be out ahead of what that next transaction is. And I think that's where understanding those different capital markets vehicles that are out there that are available to you and what the pricing is associated with those vehicles will help an organization bring together both the free cash flow that they generate against their needs of cash, and then figure out how they supplement any other sources that they would need to accomplish whatever their strategic objectives are that year.
And you talked a bit about interest volatility. How do you think about hedging and thoughts on that as a useful tool to help protect against some of the volatility?
Yeah, all of our debt, regardless of which type of debt facility, credit facility we're in, is all variable rate. It's all tied to SOFR. But what we've done over the years is, and let's call that about $7, $8 billion of debt. But we've put on $4 billion of interest rate swaps over the course of the last couple of years. So we're effectively 50% hedged. And that's probably about a sweet spot of where we are. That way, we know from my comment about predictability, we know our interest cost on those fixed rate swaps now out for the duration of those swaps. But at the same time, if rates come down, we'll benefit from a P&L perspective because we'll have lower interest cost. But I would encourage people not to just look at what I call the right side of the balance sheet where the liabilities reside, but to also look at the left side of the balance sheet where you may have interest earning assets as well. And we also hold a little over $2 billion, $3 billion almost in cash that earns interest. And so we look at this really kind of on a balanced perspective so that when we look at rate movements, it's not only how does it affect our debt, but also how does it affect the interest earnings on our cash balances as well. But I do believe kind of being somewhat neutral relative to interest rates is where we've wanted to be. I'd say we're slightly tilted towards a little bit liability sensitive, which means as rates come down, there'll be a net earnings pickup from that. But I think for our organization, what we're trying to do, as I said earlier, help companies with their spend management needs. And so for us, it's around durability, predictability, sustainability of earnings. And because of that, we've intentionally kind of put ourselves in a relatively neutral interest rate position, even though our debt itself is 100% variable, and even though our cash is 100% variable, through the use of derivatives, we've been able to adjust that. We also are mindful around the length of time, the maturity, if you will, of those derivative instruments. We don't want them necessarily all coming due on the same month, the same year. And so we ladder those out when we think about our interest rate swap portfolio. Not all $4 billion that I referenced did we enter into at the same time, and nor will they mature at the same time. And that way we can kind of continue to refresh that, rinse and repeat, if you will, that so that we keep a laddered portfolio that isn't kind of locked in on a particular market condition at a particular point in time.
You touch on something that I think is so critically important. You have to start with what is our philosophy as a business around some of these things so that it can help guide the decision making that you're going to have. So you're not just chasing random ideas or too reactive to the environment that you have. You know, if you need certain stability around things because you know what your risk tolerance is, well, then of course you have to go and make sure that you're staying within those risk guardrails. And it's not necessarily a one size fits all approach for all businesses, but I do think it has to come anchored in, you know, what is my business? Where do we play? What are these risks? And how am I then going to manage within this environment? And to that point, are there any particular industries or business models that you think in particular should be looking at things differently in the current environment, or, you know, approaching things differently?
Well, you make a great point. And as I described my journey, I spent 20 years at SunTrust, a super regional financial institution. We were all about managing interest rate risk, but taking interest rate risk. If a bank doesn't take interest rate risk, it doesn't make money. Whereas here at Corpay, we're not in the business of taking interest rate risk. We're in the business, as I said, of helping businesses with their spending needs and overall payment needs. And so because of that, it's a different tilt. And so I think it is critical, just to underscore what you said, that a business understands its strategies and what is it that it is trying to do with respect to interest rates or FX rates or some of these other market environments. So I think to your point then, in terms of various industries, I touched on one already in terms of financial institutions. In an interest rate environment in which we're operating in, they're going to structure their balance sheet differently than in the interest rate environment that we had with zero interest rates. In a business that doesn't generate a lot of free cash flow and may need to access capital markets, that they would need to kind of have a strategy around their debt environment and what's the duration of that debt. They may want longer term debt, senior notes, things that have long horizons associated with it, so that they know that they've got a stable, if you will, capital base, because they're relying on capital markets for their funding. Whereas a company like ourselves that has a lot of free cash flow, less dependent on the capital markets, then we're able to kind of use those capital markets in a way in which we need them, almost like a faucet where we can turn them on and turn them off. We can use that free cash flow to pay down the debt. But if we need to reaccess that cash flow at a later date, we can do that. So I'm sure it does somewhat align along industry lines, but it ultimately comes down to the company. What are those structural elements associated with the company that I think drives a lot around their balance sheet strategy and how they think about what their debt stack and their capital stack looks like, and then how they utilize that as effectively as possible.
So now, as you sit there today and you look ahead, what do you see as some of the potential most significant challenges or opportunities that CFOs are going to be considering when looking at their capital structures?
Well, I think we're going to be in a volatile environment for some period of time. I think some of that's just the speed of information now versus 20 years ago. There's just things move at a faster pace, period. And so I think because of that, it's going to be, you know, critical for CFOs to have one, awareness in what's in front of them. You've got to be able to have a view around what your outlook is. It's hard to know how to get somewhere if you don't have kind of a vision of how to get there. And so I think having that forward-looking view, having a view around what you think the economic environment and in the markets in which you operate in are going to be like is important. Certainly getting grounded on the company and the structure and the health of the organization, I think is also critical. I've always kind of used the phrase, you know, you want to skate to the puck and, you know, being able to anticipate where the company is going to be 6, 12, 18 months from now allows you to skate to the puck so that you're preparing for where the company is going to be at that point in time. And then I think just having then the right reporting, monitoring capabilities to be able to truly understand kind of what's going on within the organization. I go back to the cash flow forecasting. You know, CPA by trade, as I said, 10 years at Arthur Andersen. I spent more time focusing on the balance sheet and the income statement, not the statement of cash flow. That's probably still the case. But inside the organization where I have worked, particularly in the CFO capacity, but even prior to that, the treasury function was just essential because it gave you those insights in terms of what were the cash patterns, behaviors, dynamics within the organization. And I think that's critical. We can get sometimes too focused on revenue and expenses. That doesn't mean those aren't important. It's about balance, but balancing the revenues and the expenses with the cash flows. What's the cash that we're generating this month? How often does a CFO sit around the table with the executive team and talk about the earnings this month? Well, they talk about it every time. How often do they sit around the table and say, well, how much cash did we generate this month? That to me, I think is a relevant and sometimes underutilized discussion that helps factor into somebody's thinking around how they would manage their capital structure going forward and net working capital. How did our receivables and our payables change? Did we eat net working capital or did we create net working capital? I think those are also other concepts that come out of the treasury organization that I think are vital to how an organization manages its overall balance sheet. And I think they'll find that if they do that, it'll actually enrich that P&L focused conversation that we are fascinated on so much because they'll have a better footing from which to equip the business to do things that allow it to generate more revenue or to manage its expenses more effectively.
Well, and it's interesting when you talk about that importance of treasury, because I think it can sometimes be underappreciated or overlooked. You know, in your business, I'm sure it gets a lot more appreciation, especially when you're in financial services. In some businesses, it's still equally important, but not always given the same voice at the table or the understanding of what it could mean. And so I think that's, you know, that is such a great piece of advice for all of us. I certainly look at, you know, my own experience along the way, different types of debt structures made sense depending if I was, I used to be in automotive industry. Well, very different risks there and the way that you're getting paid, you don't get the same free cash flow that you do in other industries. And so you're looking, how are you going to structure that debt and make sure you've got absolute confidence that it will be available to you when you might need it. Otherwise, it could absolutely stop your business from being able to grow when opportunity right. comes because you can't, you know, build that next line, buy that next piece of equipment and do the things that you're going to need to do. Whereas, you know, now I'm in the technology industry and the way we look at things there with free cash flow and not as much capital expenditure, definitely very different approach, but treasury management still matters in both of those cases. So yeah, I appreciate you're flagging that because you're even for me sort of reminding me about, you know, that importance of treasury, regardless of that industry or that business model. Now, one final question for you. If you could give just two pieces of advice to our audience on from all the years and lessons that you've learned about how to effectively manage debt, and especially with today's climate in mind, what would that be?
One, work off of a solid set of facts. Have a solid set of facts from which to operate. And that gets back to some of the things we've talked about in terms of understanding the environment externally and internally, and cash flows and strategy and demands and, you know, all of those types of things. Because these are many times big decisions when you talk about managing debt. So you're making decisions that sometimes have durations of multiple years. Do I enter into a swap? Yes or no. Do I refinance debt? Yes or no. You can change your mind. But once you do that, you're locked into a contract. And these contracts have long tails associated with them. And so you want to make sure that you've got a good repertoire of information in front of you in order to make that decision. The other thing I would say is surround yourself by quality advisors, because even if internally you think you can have the best dashboard and the best set of reporting, you can get into a little bit of an echo chamber and not necessarily, you know, be in touch with some things that are going on even in your industry or just more broadly. And I think being in touch with advisors that are quality, that have continuity within your organization, meaning they know you, I think is really important, because they can pressure test your ideas and strategies. They can bring new information into the equation that you did not otherwise have. And it just, overall, the goal is being smart, making judicious, smart decisions around how you manage the balance sheet. And as I said, these aren't things that you change every day. These are things that come and go. And so you need to make these decisions well-informed. And my overarching piece of advice is be well-informed. And my two ways of getting there is having a rich set of data internally, but also balancing that with a lot of targeted outside advisors.
As I think about for myself, you know, those advisors that you can count on when something's happening, there's changes, that they're going to be looking out for you and, you know, seeing around those corners or shining a light on things that may be obvious to you, but may not. You know, that value added piece of what some of the best advisors I've worked with, it's hard to exactly pinpoint what that's worth, because it's the extra piece of how they show up in the conversations. But it's absolutely been invaluable in terms of just being able to help you get to quicker answers, not maybe be blinded by something that they're seeing that you're not seeing, because they sit in different seats than we do.
That's right.
And can see across so many different companies or industries and helping you shine a light. So I definitely agree with you. You know, not all advisors are equal, and finding the right ones for your company, your industry, for the things that are going to matter for most to you, can make a real big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And while we have a whole host of advisors that we work with, the ones I'd say are closest to us, I hear from them in some cases weekly, just to give your listeners an opportunity to say, well, what does that look like to you? I hear from them, particularly in times like this, where there's activity going on around tariffs and volatility in FX markets. But the advisors closest to us are reaching out with the information that's giving me a pulse on things that I otherwise wouldn't have without their insights.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. Thank you so much, Tom, for joining me today and sharing your insights and advice. Now, whenever we have somebody on the show, we do have two rapid fire questions that we like to ask. So are you ready?
Let's do it. I'd like a pop quiz.
All right. First one, what is the hallmark of mature finance teams in how they operate?
My North Star has always been value added. Be a value added finance organization. And that means you can sit at the table and give real advice around the health of the finance organization. You're able to distill a lot of complex information, and you're able to deliver it to your audience, whether that's an executive team, a board, externally. but you're able to give advice that helps the business move forward. This isn't a role that is about the past. It's about the past and the future and helping an organization be more successful in meeting its objectives.
I couldn't agree more with you. The second question, what always helps to turn a bad day around for you?
You know, probably solving problems. You would think, oh, problems are a bad thing. But I kind of look at problems as an opportunity. You know, many times the way you approach something is more about your perspective than it is about the reality. I think turning a bad day around is when you are able to dig in with a team. You generally can't do it individually, to be able to sit there and chip away, if not solve, because sometimes it takes some time, but chip away and make progress at solving problems. And I think that's something that I thrive on, I enjoy. A lot of times when I'm coaching some people over the course of my career, I say, listen, you know, coming into the office and telling me about a problem is great. I want you to do that. But solutions to problems is where the real value is. And I always encourage and try to lead the finance organization where we are helping bring solutions, not just helping identify problems. And that's how I define my good days is when I'm bringing solutions forward.
Some more great advice there. Tom, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. I really enjoyed it.
Want to learn more about today's discussion? Check out the resources in our show notes. Don't miss out on future episodes. Subscribe to the CFO Show on your favorite podcast platform. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. See you next time.